Marketing is everywhere. From the billboards on the highways to the notifications on your phone, we are constantly bombarded with people trying to sell us stuff. What makes good marketing? Are you doing enough in your life personally and professionally to market yourself? You have questions, and the Marketing Mad Men have answers. Search the Marketing Mad Men on Google or your favorite podcast provider to get practical marketing advice from expert guests who are shaping and reshaping the business world. They say marketing is a madman's game. Join the Marketing Mad Men every Saturday at 4 p.m. to find out why.
This is a 680 The Fan podcast. To hear more live and local sports content like this, tune into 680 AM or 93.7 FM or download the Fan app. It's The Golf Show with Brian Katrick.
He's been the talk of the course today with his huge drives.
You know, here's a guy.
It's early Sunday morning. The sun is coming up.
You heard the laughter of Chris Mascaro. So why do you love Live so much?
Are we too crossed and slapped?
No. We fired J.R. Ross. This court case doesn't matter.
I didn't feel the need to acknowledge it.
This guy can roll his rock.
Big match coming up. I'm going to be needing a caddy.
What am I going to do?
Why don't you try him a little left? And why don't you try backing up? Give me just a little room.
Help me keep my head.
You have circled an area of interest.
Oh, that's not right.
Golf requires goofy pants and a fat ass.
I'd be expecting a lawsuit.
You know, you don't deserve any credit hitting the ball with that swing of yours. Try to hit one with my swing.
I'm catching on the ball, right? Yeah. Moving my head. Yeah. I'm laying it off. Well, that too. I'm pronating. When you're not shooting me, I'm clearing too early. I'm clearing too late. My God, my swing fell by unfolding lawn chair.
That's right up, folks. See if you can outdrive the amazing golf ball.
Down. It looks like I'm a wreck. It's in the hole.
Save me.
This is a waste of everybody's time.
Gunga Galunga.
Which means happy Sunday morning to you. It's the Golf Show on the Fan, 680 and 93.7 FM. It's also Easter Sunday, and we are glad to have you with us here as we are coming to you live on Easter Sunday. And by we, I mean, well, JR's not here. I look over there. He's not here. Chris Mascaro, also not here. We do have the assistant to the regional producer, Adam Crooks, on the other side of the glass. Good morning, Adam.
How's it going?
And you even probably showed up on time. I didn't even look.
I did. I showed up 2 minutes early today.
I didn't look.
A whole 2 minutes.
It's not hard to just get here early. And you did.
I did do it. I did it for once.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
So we hope that you're out. Everybody's got big Easter plans. I'm dressed up like an Easter egg today because, hey, we got the Easter egg hunt today. That's going to be fun. Easter and golf haven't necessarily always gone hand in hand, but you do every 2 or 3 years. The Masters ends on Easter Sunday. So it kind of comes up, and you know it's a whole lot of fun.
Masters on Easter is fantastic. I love nothing more than going to church in the morning and coming home and having the Masters on like four different screens.
It's a good day. You got four different screens?
Well, no, I've got the TV with the CBS broadcast, and then I've got my phone and my computer, and you know.
It's interesting that you mention that. The second screen experience has become a thing over the last 10, 15 years, 10 years, really. Do you do that at the Masters? They have online streams. They have an Amen Corner feed, and they have a Par 3s feed, and they'll have a featured group or two. But to me, the whole point of the Masters broadcast is it's slower, it's quieter, it's less, there are fewer graphics on it. You look inside the ropes. No one walks inside the ropes at Augusta National except for the players and the caddies. There's no walking scorer. The officials are positioned where they're out of the way. They sit. They don't walk. They sit. There's a rules official right wherever you're going to need that person. But they're not going to be walking along, you know, inside the ropes in a normal event that's busy, which means the visuals are busy. There's sponsor signs everywhere. Everything's busy. The Masters, it's less busy. It's one of the things we like about it. I'd never thought about the second screen experience on a broadcast that's designed to be calmer than everything else.
Well, I have to know what's going on at 15, 16 while the leaders are playing too. You know, if you've got somebody making a but if you've got somebody making a charge on the back nine, especially before the broadcast starts,
they'll tell you.
Well, the broadcast starts at what, two?
Two or three? Yeah.
Well, it starts at two on Sundays, but anytime before the broadcast.
Hang on a second. Hang on a second. Did you just dismissively say, "Well, it starts at two on Sundays"?
Yes.
To a guy that's covering his 23rd Masters.
It always starts an hour early on Sundays because the leaders tee off at like, what, 2:45 on Sunday?
Sometimes three.
Yes. So it starts an hour early so they can get the groups before the leader teeing off.
Did you just dismissively? First of all, I don't know that that's correct.
Second of all, you never watch it on TV. You're calling it on 1516.
Sometimes I'm calling it from the 18th tower, like this year.
I've never seen you call it from the 18th tower, but continue.
What are we doing here? We had half a conversation about somebody else that's overstepping and under. You don't believe I?
Well, I'm not overstepping.
Do you remember when Greg Norman was sitting in the 18th tower?
No.
Okay. Well, I was sitting next to him. The year before that. What are we doing here?
Maybe I have done a little research. I have walked past the fishbowl on 18 multiple times, and you have never been in there.
We don't use it all day. We don't use it very often, as it turns out. We used to use the old one a lot. Wow.
I am right about the TV broadcast.
I doubt it. Look it up. Look up when they started it last year. This is the 26th year of this radio show right here. And 21-year-old Adam Crooks is telling a guy that's been in the Masters 23 times how this works. Look it up when it started last year. Now, last year may be wrong because last year they had the we were way behind on the schedule last year.
Sunday, April 9th, 2 p.m. to 7 p.m.
Yeah.
You want me to pull up the 2022
schedule?
Look
at one before that. Yeah, last year we had all kinds of rain problems, if you remember. They were off schedule. But I'm glad that they start an hour before the final tee time, in your opinion, whether they do or they don't. The whole point is, it's a minimalist broadcast.
Fourth round coverage, 2 to 7 p.m. CBS.
Okay, Adam is so happy with himself. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Do you understand the point about it being a minimalist broadcast?
Yes, I do understand that.
So they're going to show it to you. If a guy makes birdie at 15, if you listen very carefully,
you can hear it.
Yeah, unless you're distracted by your phone or your tablet or what else you have going on, you can hear it. And then you know, hey, in a second, they're going to show us that.
I just like seeing it on my phone or my TV or whatever.
So I don't know what we're going to do about this. This is a problem.
Especially like before the broadcast starts. Like, you know, they're not on at 1:30. So, you know, I have to know I have to have multiple screens so I know what's happening at Amen Corner. I know what's happening at 1516 because I don't want to wait for the broadcast to start.
I love the passion. I don't know about a multi-screen experience for the Masters.
You should try it sometime.
Maybe someday I will. It won't be this year because I'll be hosting until 2 p.m. And then I'll be going out to 15 and 16.
And I'll see you at 15 and 16.
Hosting from 18.
I won't see you hosting from 18.
Apparently not. But yet it's going to happen.
I'm sure it will.
Are you?
Yes. I'll listen to you host from 18 one day.
I'm just going to have to get my resume written on a shirt that I wear in here from now on. I just don't understand. I really didn't. I don't need anybody to kiss the ring, but for crying out loud.
I was right about the TV broadcast schedule.
Okay. Yes, you were.
Yeah.
Congratulations.
You're welcome. Thank you.
I mean, it's not just you. The other two clowns, they're learning as well. This isn't a hobby.
It's not a hobby for you?
I mean, we're trying to keep it friendly in here, but... Settle down, Beavis. Okay. If you want to do a multi-screen experience at the Masters, you go right ahead. Masters, the Masters app is the best in the business. Masters.com has an incredible array of options for you.
I have the Masters app on my phone.
Our colleagues at CBS Sports produce all of that, and it is amazing content, and they're doing that for you. They're also doing that you know, they also dedicate all those resources to the TV show so that you don't have to do that. But hey, you do whatever you want to do. That's fine.
Are you criticizing my Masters
very
watching
much so.
Experience?
Yes, very much. You're missing it. If you've got more than one screen up for the Masters, you are missing the show.
Okay, but at 11 a.m. on Friday, there's no TV broadcast. The only broadcasting options I have are to pull up the Masters app and watch the Amen Corner feed,
yep,
or watch the 15-16 feed, or watch the featured groups.
You can also listen to the radio broadcast at 11 a.m. It's going to be hosted by a certain guy that you're staring at right now on Friday.
Maybe I'll do that.
Maybe you will. But I would recommend that you only do one of those at a time.
Why? I want to know what's happening on 15-16 at the same time that I want to know what's happening at Amen Corner.
You might learn something. That's why.
But if there's a group, if Louis Oosthuizen, who I don't think is playing this year.
Don't know.
If Louis Oosthuizen goes from Amen Corner to 15-16, but Tiger's coming through Amen Corner, like I want to see Tiger and Louis.
There's an old phrase in football that if you have, I believe the late, great Dan Reeves may have even said it. I'm sure plenty of people have said it. But if you think you have two quarterbacks, you don't have one. I'll let that sink in.
We're one talking screen. About golf here.
One screen.
Yes.
They'll give you everything you need. I promise you.
But if I want to see Tiger and Louis Danny Willett. What about Danny Willett?
He's not going to make any of the screens. He's not any of the feeds. They're going to have to come up. There's an idea. For any of the folks that are listening right now that may be involved in the multimedia broadcast of the Masters, Adam Crooks would like to see a Danny Willett feed.
Yes.
There's
just,
one.
Just Danny Willett.
I promise you there's one they haven't thought of yet. So there's one. You've broken new ground.
Yes.
You've got a good idea.
The Danny Willett feed.
Yes. But I would encourage you to give those. Give good old Jim Nantz a chance.
I love Jim Nantz.
I bet you he'll go ahead and show you everything.
I'm sure he will, but...
Give him a chance.
Yeah, you know, at 11 a.m. on a Friday.
See what that kid can do.
Listen, I love Jim Nantz. Jim Nantz is fantastic.
Yeah, yeah, sure. One screen. It's enough. Believe it or not,
maybe.
It's even better.
Maybe.
One screen. It's not like I'm telling you to listen to it on an 8-track. One screen. Believe me.
Well,
You're not going to. It's okay.
Listen.
It's fine.
During the CBS broadcast.
You're telling me listen. You listen. You don't know nothing. I've been doing it longer than you've been alive. You listen. Turn off the other screens. You listen. For crying out loud.
I think we got a little bit off track.
Yeah. I got 19 stories up here because I'm trying to figure out how to fill 15 minutes. We got an interview in the second segment. It's going to be great. We filled 12 of the 15 minutes with you telling me how it is on the Masters broadcast.
Well, I was right, to be fair.
You were right on when they started. The last couple of years. Oh. Two screens. Go ahead. Have all the screens you want. I don't know why you wouldn't pull up whatever race is going on that day, too. Just get that on a screen.
Because I don't care about racing that day. I only care about the Masters.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah. I don't even know where they're racing that day. I probably should know.
Yep. It's a restrictor plate race. A couple hours from here.
Is it at Talladega?
As a matter of fact, it is. Pretty sure it is.
Well, then I'll record Talladega, watch the Masters. Actually, I'm probably going on Sunday anyway, so it won't matter.
Yeah, pretty sure it is. Okay, so the Texas Children's Hospital Houston Open is going on. We have a 5-way tie for the lead, including the world number one, Scottie Scheffler. I don't know how many screens you were watching this on. I suspect I know the number's smaller than one. But we have a 5-way tie for the lead. David Skins, who's been knocking on the door, shot 65 yesterday. Steven Yeager, who's been knocking on the door. Shot 66 yesterday. Thomas Dietrich shot 67. Alejandro Tosti shot 68. And the number one player in the world, Scottie Scheffler, shot 66. He's going for three wins in a row.
Yeah, but Yeah, but did you see who shot 7-under yesterday?
I'm going to be okay in here, Adam. 26 years. Most of them, it was a one-man show.
Yeah, but...
No, who shot that?
Nick Dunlap! Yes. He's back!
Yes, Nick Dunlap is currently tied for sixth. He's only one shot out of the lead. There was a big kerfuffle between Alejandro Tosti and Tony Finau yesterday, in case you missed it. So a couple of things have happened that you need to know if you're just catching up here on this Sunday morning, like you probably are if you're producing the golf show.
Well, that's
Scotty Scheffler had his run of consecutive rounds under par come to an end on Friday. I'm going to give you the number of rounds. It was right here, and then it ended. Consecutive rounds under par. It ended with a three-putt double on the 18th hole. 28 consecutive rounds under par. Not par or better. 20 goes all the way back to the Sunday of the Tour Championship. Scotty Scheffler has not shot par or worse since then. 28 consecutive rounds. He gets to the 18th hole. Par is going to make it 29. Still kind of he'd hit a ball in the water. He'd made a double. He wasn't a great round. He was kind of leaking a little oil. Has a six-footer for par. Misses it. Walks over to tap in the two-footer. Misses it. Bang. Streak over. So that happened on Friday. Then yesterday, Alejandro Tosti, good young player, fiery, played his college golf at the University of Florida. He and Tony Finau get into it. They have an identical putt on the fourth hole. They're both 38 feet, 8 inches, according to ShotLink. Now, ShotLink, when you get down to inches, can be off. So if it says 38 feet, 8 inches for both of them, probably one of them was an inch closer. But in this case, the two golf balls are close enough to where I think Finau would have been standing on Tosti's line, or would have been standing on his coin. So they're right next to each other. They can see. So in stroke play, there's no rule. It's policy. Whoever's away goes first. In match play, it's a rule. But in stroke play, it's just courtesy. Whoever's away is going to go. If you're going to have the stick in, you want it in, but I'm going to take it out. We'll probably leave you, let you get it. Everything's just kind of by hand. In this case, it's an identical putt, and whoever hits it's going to show the other guy a line. But it's the fourth hole, and it's Saturday. You know, it's probably okay. And by the way, it's a 40-footer. It's probably okay if...
38 feet.
Somebody... Thank you. Thank you for that, Adam. 38 feet, 8 inches, according to ShotLink.
Yeah.
Which, if you remember earlier, you were probably looking at your other screen. If you remember earlier, I said, can be off by some of these inches.
I was about to say, it could be 38 feet, 7 inches.
Could have been 40 feet.
Could be 40 feet. Wasn't 40 feet, but it could have been.
How do you know?
Because it says 38 feet. It's not going to be off by 2 feet.
How do you know?
Because there's no way that the margin of error is 2 feet. That would be way too much.
How do you know? So you're telling me
because I've done math?
But you've never used the ShotLink system at a golf tournament?
I haven't.
You've never walked the golf course covering a golf tournament?
Actually, that's not true.
That is... 100%
I walked a golf course covering the KSU women's intercollegiate up at Pine Tree this week.
So they had, by the way, Pine Tree's in fantastic shape.
It is fantastic.
Brett Barton's a great, he's a genius. They had live television coverage of that event, and you were walking covering
that? It wasn't
that?
Live television coverage event, but I had to write the recap for it, and I posted videos to the KSU Owls Twitter account, and yeah.
So
I covered it.
Same thing.
It's similar.
Let me speak for most of the audience when I say we've had enough Adam Crooks. It's 18 minutes. Not everybody. Mom and Dad, he's doing great. Still doing great. He showed up on time today. The rest of the audience? So they start to argue. Finau and Tosti start to argue a little bit. See, they didn't always have the ShotLink system. You know, they used to actually didn't even measure. ShotLink systems only came out in 2003. Believe it or not, there was coverage of golf that at least one of us participated in before 2003. Plus, that first system wasn't super, And this is at least the 10th iteration of this. So some of us may have seen it before we had ShotLink, and then every iteration of ShotLink there ever has been. But I didn't write the recap for the Tuesday event. Crying out loud. So Toasty and Finau are arguing. They decide that Toasty's going to go. They argued for 4 minutes. He then has Finau move his coin, even though it wasn't in the way. He says it was distracting him. That's fine. This goes on. Finau hasn't talked to the media about it. Toasty is apparently a bit of a fireball. If you remember, and I know Adam does, he was covering this. He was probably sitting in the NBC booth for it. Last August, it was Alejandro Toasty that was kicked out of a Corn Ferry Tour event for a, quote, disciplinary matter. There were all kinds of reports about treating a volunteer wrong and tossing of clubs, but, I mean, in Adam's lifetime, I can only remember two players being kicked out of a tournament for behavioral reasons. We're talking about on a big level. I'm sure it's happened on other levels, but the European Tour, interestingly enough, in Saudi Arabia, kicked Sergio Garcia out of a golf tournament in the middle of it. He now works for those folks. And the Korn Ferry Tour kicked Alejandro Toasty out last year. So that's the guy that gets sideways with Tony Finau. I don't know who was right or who was wrong. Let me tell you how this is supposed to be handled. He is clearly the younger statesman. He has zero PGA Tour wins. Tony has, what, eight? Something like that. The right hand, they're both right-handed. The person whose ball is on the left is supposed to go first. So you don't stand on the coin of the person whose ball is on the right. That's how that's supposed to go. Especially if the person whose ball is on the left is also the kid, the young kid, who hasn't made a name for himself yet, except for being a jerk. That's who's supposed to go. Now, I'm all for Alejandro Toasty trying to stick up for himself, trying to say, hey, my opinion's valid. I can watch the Masters on as many screens as I want to. I'm all for that. But don't be a jerk about it. If you're upsetting Tony Finau, who is one of the nicest players in the history of the game, you're probably out of line. And if you're the ball on the left and you can't figure out who's away, just hit it. It's a 40-footer. 38 feet, 8 inches, according to ShotLink. See how well this segment's gone since then, Adam? It's gone really well, I think. So that's Alejandro Toasty. Mark it down. We tell you that story so we can tell you this story. That guy's tied for the lead. Some of you heard that and said, hey, I'm rooting for the kid. Good. The kid's part of the five-way tie for the lead. You can watch it later today on CBS at whatever time Adam says it's. Actually, it's going to be on NBC. At whatever time Adam says it's going to start. Time's that going to be, Adam?
I don't know.
Okay. It's fine. So watch that. Alejandro Toasty, fiery temper, good player, tied for the lead, got sideways with Tony Finau. And I'm trying to look at that. I don't have the tee times. I'm trying to see who he's got. There's a chance he's got Scottie Scheffler. I'll have the tee times for you coming up. When we come back, a guy named Hughes Norton. Longtime golf fans know who Hughes Norton is. Folks who watch the Masters on multiple screens do not know who Hughes Norton is. Adam Crooks, you know who Hughes Norton is?
Yes.
Wrong answer.
I listened to part of the interview.
Okay. Who was he the agent for?
A golfer?
Yeah, that's right.
Tiger?
He was Tiger's first agent.
I was right.
Before that, he was Greg Norman's agent.
I didn't listen that far.
He just wrote a book about it. We will hear from Hughes Norton next. It's the Golf Show, unless Adam's got something to say. It's the Golf Show on The Fan, 680 and 93.7 FM. Yes, indeed. On an Easter Sunday, Chris Mascaro off today, celebrating with his family. Same for J.R. Ross. Adam Crooks and I are in here discussing the issues of the day. One issue from this previous segment, we went and found the tee times. We're talking about Alejandro Toasty, who's in this five-way tie for the lead at the Houston Open. Could he possibly be in the final group with Scottie Scheffler? Well, the answer is no. They're playing threes. It'll be David Skins, Steven Yeager, and Scheffler in the final group. First in, last out. So that's just based on how they were paired yesterday. Toasty is in the second to last grouping of the day. He will have Thomas Dietrich and Nick Dunlap. So Toasty and Scheffler not in the same group today and the final round in Houston.
We are pleased to be joined by Super Agent Hughes Norton. That's how I got introduced to him years and years ago. That's how I found out to know him. Super Agent Hughes Norton. He was the agent for Tiger Woods, Greg Norman, among others. We're going to talk all about that. He's got a new book out called Rainmaker, and he joins us right now. Hughes, welcome to the show. Thanks for the time.
Hey, Brian. Thanks for having me on.
All right. There's 1,000 stories, and we're going to get a lot of them. Let's start with what made you decide to put them all together into a book?
Had no intention of doing so. You know, all these years have gone by, Brian. I left IMG at the end of 1998, and I was lucky enough to get a severance agreement, and it was sort of a handcuffs deal. I couldn't talk anything about what had happened at IMG for 10 years. So by the time 2008 rolled around, any thoughts I may have ever had about doing a book were history. And I did a podcast 2 years ago. It's a popular one, No Laying Up, with Chris Solomon. And a friend asked me to do it. And I really hadn't talked to the media about anything I had done as an agent at IMG for years and years and years. But I thought, what the heck, go on the podcast. And in the next month or so, 15 or 20 people came up to me on the street at the country club. Hey, man, I love that podcast. That was really great. And I'm thinking to myself, wow, you know, I don't listen to podcasts. I guess people do. And about that point, I got an email out of the blue from George Pepper, who you remember, Brian, was editor of Golf Magazine for years and years and years, a very talented golf writer. And his email said, Hughes, enjoyed your podcast. Is it time we finally do that book together? And I thought, you know, I'm not getting any younger. This might be my one and only time. And the great part was, Brian, that George knew me all those years. So in telling our story, he was familiar with everything and wasn't a stranger at all to the various stuff I was doing for all my clients. So it really flowed, you know, naturally, thanks to that. And he also, because I knew him and liked him, I felt he could write authentically in my voice. You know, that's very important for an autobiography.
Sure. And I love his presumptuousness, too. Hey, when are we doing this book? Well, who said you're doing it, George? I love it. I would pick him, too. That's a heck of a choice. All right. So the stories that everybody wants to hear about, and you've got them in there. To me, Tiger bursts on the scene in the public's eye, the non-golf public's eye, when he won the Masters in 1997. There was a whole lot of the picture before that, and you were involved in all of that, including, you know, Earl Woods, who was shaping Tiger's career. What do we need to know about Tiger pre-1997 Masters?
Well, of course, he was the most accomplished amateur record ever. You know, you can go, Bobby Jones never won 3 U.S. amateurs in a row, and I don't think there were junior amateur championships back then, but that, to me, I've said, Brian, many times, you know, Tiger's had so many amazing achievements as a pro. You know, just pick one at random. He won 4 major championships in a row. No, he didn't win the Grand Slam. But just doing that alone, you know, Jack Nicklaus never did that, etc. But I've often thought and still believe that the most impressive thing this kid ever accomplished in his whole career, amateur and pro, was winning those 3 junior AMs in a row. Remember, that's a funny age group. It's 14 to 17. So you get 14-year-olds who, like Tiger at that age, was 5'8", 130 pounds, playing 17-year-olds who have matured. And so to pull that off, and nobody's ever done that, you know, Jordan Spieth won 2 juniors, but not in a row. So that's pretty amazing. And then to win the 3 U.S. amateurs. So all of this is evolving and kind of, as Earl liked to say, the legend was building with winning all these tournaments. And by the way, you'll remember this, Tiger was behind. He was down in all those matches, all 6 in the finals, and came from behind, way behind in 2 or 3 of them. five or six down with 18 to go, that sort of thing. So as Tiger's developing, he now finishes the amateur career. It's time for college. What's he going to do? There really wasn't any thought of turning pro at that age. He said, I want to go to college. I think Earl and Tita, his parents, wanted him to as well. And he went to Stanford, and he won 10 college tournaments in the first 2 years. And at that point, there really wasn't much else for him to achieve in amateur or collegiate golf. And his game wasn't going to get any better there by staying in school. So that's when he made the decision to turn pro.
Pretty good decision. Now, he also had some issues at the end, amateur status issues that wouldn't be the case now, thankfully, at the end of his college career. Here's the story that's floating around. Hughes Norton, our guest, you know the truth here. The book is called Rainmaker, and there's more in there than just Tiger Woods. But here's the story that's floating around to the public, Hughes. A lunch while a Stanford student, a lunch with Arnold Palmer, and Mr. Palmer may have picked up the tab, and the NCAA starts poking around, and Tiger says, that's enough. I'm out of here. Forget about college golf. It's too much of a hassle. Oversimplified, any of that correct? Where are we at with that story?
All correct. Arnold, of course, the gentleman that he always was, paid for lunch and didn't think for a second about he might be breaking NCAA rules. And it was such a nit, you know, it's such a little thing to pick on. Of course, that's the way the NCAA has always operated. And it did really irritate Tiger. You know, did it make him turn pro the next week? No. But it certainly accelerated his thinking of, you know, what am I staying here? What am I doing here? You know, it's time to get out and see if my game really does match up with the best players in the world.
Turned out to be a good call. You were the guy steering that decision. You had steered Greg Norman. We're going to get to Greg Norman in a little bit. But, you know, everybody wants to know about Tiger. So you steer that decision. You immediately, you refer to it as generational money. And I believe it was. Still is. I'm not sure he's ever gotten through that first lump that you got him. I don't know that any of us could have. You had all these deals lined up and waiting. What was that? What was that time like for you as his agent?
It was as exciting as it can get. You know, when you're an agent, you dream of having a, you know, we talked about generational wealth. This is a looking like at the time, a generational talent, which of course he turned out to be. And that's, you know, that's an agent's dream. It's what you live for. It's why you've worked all the years and learned things and gotten experience. So you can put, you know, all your stuff together for somebody that's really a superstar. And at the time, I made a decision, rightly or wrongly, I think it turned out pretty well, that rather than shop Tiger around in typical fashion, just the way our book that we wrote, you know, our literary agent, Brian, went to all the different publishers, and what kind of deal can we get? And that's the way sales are made in the golf industry too, if you're representing somebody. But I thought, I had a sort of a premonition because Nike already was huge in tennis and in team sports, and they were sort of messing around on the fringes with golf. And I thought, not only would this company be able to pay Tiger more than anybody else, but I also took into account the promotional power. You know what Nike spends on advertising every year. I mean, it's hundreds of millions of dollars. And this would be a great partner to be with, not only for the money, if it was right, but also to keep Tiger in the headlines. And that promotes in ads and promotional stuff all around the world. And that in turn helps all the other companies who might be Tiger sponsors, if you follow that. And so I went to Nike and went there four or five times, just kind of assessing the landscape and learning as much as I could about them. And it finally came down to me saying to them, look, I can shop this. We can go to every other clothing and shoe company, but here's the deal. If you guys are prepared to step up, and I mean really step up with Michael Jordan type money at the time, you can have them. I mean, you won't have to worry that maybe we're going to go someplace else at the 11th hour. And they bought it. And Tiger ended up with the most amazing, you know, 5-year, $40 million deal as before he hit a ball as a pro. And that, along with the Titleist deal, which we did at the same time with Wally Uhlheim, one of the brightest, most capable executives in the game, by the way. Those two deals are the $60 million that you referenced. And the beauty of them was, just to tie it all in a bow here, I was able to make those deals guaranteed. What do I mean by that? There was no recall or resource that either one of those companies could call upon to reduce Tiger's annual compensation if he didn't play well. So even if he'd missed every cut as a pro, which, you know, let's be honest, he wasn't going to, but we've seen a lot of kids that were supposed to be can't miss that come out and struggle for a while. Even if that had happened, all of that money was guaranteed.
Wow. Strong work. And it's so brilliant and true. Those were all Nike commercials that we saw, those iconic spots over the years. But they benefited every single one of his sponsors because those were the things. That was the company. That was the conduit that he rode. I mean, obviously, his golf game as well. But that's what put him up there in the public eye. And it was worth something to everybody else. It was a brilliant move. His talent didn't hurt either. Again, before we move on to Greg, the end of the deal. We just came through the end of the deal. That deal ended. It had been extended several times. They let it run out. Somebody let it run out. Somehow it ended December 31st of this year. What'd you think of that?
You know, all things come to an end eventually. And that it lasted that long, you know, 25 years is pretty unusual in the sporting goods business. You know, Jordan's another one that did, and he's still with them. I think Nike, what really happened, Brian, is they got into the golf club business, hard goods. First they were with clothes and shoes, and then they decided to compete in the hard goods business. Totally different deal, an area they weren't really comfortable with. They'd never done tennis rackets, for example, before. They just made tennis clothes and tennis shoes. So that didn't end up as successful as all their other stuff that Nike does. And I think it was just time, you know, to put their resources elsewhere.
Hughes Norton. The book is Rainmaker. George Pepper ghost wrote it with Hughes Norton. And unfortunately, we're going to run out of time here. So that was, you may get to hear the rest of that on PGA Tour Radio. May give that to Chris if he wants to run it. Sorry, we don't have a chance to run all of that. The book is doing very well. And he did the audiobook also. Sorry you missed the Greg Norman stories. Greg Norman, a great business mind. He and Hughes had a great relationship for a lot of years. So really cool. Hughes was in town, by the way. He was in town, spoke at the Cherokee Town and Country Club earlier this week. That was, I'm sure it was a great, great job. He is a dynamic speaker. So we're out of time here on a Sunday morning. We've got some other things to get to when we come back. It's the Golf Show on The Fan, 680 and 93.7 FM.
Welcome back to The Golf Show, your Sunday morning tea time with Brian Katrick, presented by Cliggy's Cards and PlayTheGolfIsland.com. This is Atlanta's Golf Station, The Fan.
And happy Easter Sunday to you again. Thanks to Hughes Norton for some time there. Be able to hear the rest of that somewhere. I don't know. Maybe we'll put it on the podcast. I don't know what we're going to do with it. But you can read the book. He wrote a book, and it's available. He actually read the audio version of the book also, which I really like. I got Billy Walters' book. Billy Walters is the big gambling guy, gambling expert, and he loves golf. And he has a couple of parables in there about Phil Mickelson. And I got the audio version of Billy Walters' book, and it's narrated by Billy Walters, who's not a professional narrator. He's a swashbuckler, and he cusses. And it's
swashbuckler.
Awesome. He's a swashbuckler, and it is strong to hear him. You know, the words coming out of his mouth are authentic. Okay, here's a couple of things that you got to know. First of all, that was the voice of Adam Crooks, who's going to be at the Masters. But you're not going to be at the Masters. He's going. Got a couple of tickets, which is fantastic. Monday of Masters week, we have an eclipse. Have you read about this eclipse?
I have read about the eclipse, yeah.
So we're not in the, quote, path of totality here. But there are a bunch of golf courses that are. It's coming right up basically the middle of the country. Tim Gavrich over at Golf Channel wrote an article. Here are the golf courses that are in the path of totality. We actually talked to one of the superintendents on Wednesday that's in the path of totality. French Lick Golf Resort there in French Lick, Indiana is in the path of totality. I remember the last eclipse. I don't know if it's the last eclipse. I remember being in one when I was in 7th grade, 8th grade, 84-ish, 80 somewhere in there. And there was a big deal made about this. And it was, first of all, if you're in the path of totality, it's 4 minutes. But so you better look fast. And, of course, don't look at it. It was, I'm looking outside of our studios here in the Battery, and the sun is not out. It's cloudy. That's what it looked like in 1984. All of the buildup, all of the hubbub, this is what it looked like. So, I don't know. Maybe if you... hopefully it's everything it's supposed to be.
So Master. Can we add eclipses to the list of things you hate next to turtles?
No, I'm good. I'm good with eclipses. I just okay. That was overrated. I'm not good with the turtles.
Because they attacked your statue or
No, just they're taking my tax dollars.
The turtles are taking your tax dollars?
Oh yeah. You didn't know that? You're paying for all this turtle stuff too. Not nearly as much as productive people are, but you are paying for the turtles. Now how do you feel about them?
Good, for the turtles.
No, it's not good for the turtles.
They can, the turtles can have my tax dollars.
This is why we're at where we're at. This is it. You just heard it. This is why we are where we're at.
Is this why I'm the producer and you're the host?
You're the assistant to the executive producer. I got a huge email earlier this week from the folks over at Legacy in Fox Creek. The annual Arthur Bacon Smyrna City Championship is on.
7-time Smyrna City champion Brian Katrick.
Only 5, but it's been close. I've been close the last couple years. Randy White's been playing good, and then, it's been hurting. But I may have a little something for him this year. Who knows? I'm going to play, and you can play too. It is open. The Smyrna City Championship is open.
How does one play?
Go over to legacyfoxcreek.com. There's got to be something there. Just call them over at Fox Creek and sign up. It's May the 4th and the 5th. May the 4th is Star Wars Day.
Yes, it is.
May the 4th be with you. So it's the first week in May, first weekend, Saturday and Sunday, both rounds at Fox Creek. We will probably do this show live from Fox Creek that day on Sunday. 9 a.m. shotguns. And you can play with your friends. You can play in a just-for-fun division. It's excellent. Or you can try to go win the trophy. Have at it. And I encourage you to do that.
So the shotgun start, is there, that sounds like a great idea. It'd be great if another golf league did
that. Yeah, yeah. Could you imagine Scottie Scheffler winning the Players' Championship on the third green? While Wyndham Clark is lipping out on the 18th at the same time? Because that's what would have happened. Would have been awesome. All right, you heard them talking on the show before us. Tigers playing practice rounds at Augusta. That's cool. The Roms are pregnant again. That's cool. We don't even have enough time to get to everything. Enjoy the golf. Enjoy your Easter Sunday. We will chat with you next week.
This is a 680 The Fan podcast. To hear more live and local sports content like this, tune into 680 AM or 93.7 FM or download the Fan app.
Marketing is everywhere, from the billboards on the highways to the notifications on your phone. We are constantly bombarded with people trying to sell us stuff. What makes good marketing? Are you doing enough in your life personally and professionally to market yourself? You have questions, and the Marketing Mad Men have answers. Search the Marketing Mad Men on Google or your favorite podcast provider to get practical marketing advice from expert guests who are shaping and reshaping the business world. They say marketing is a Mad Men's game. Join the Marketing Mad Men every Saturday at 4 p.m. to find out why.
This morning in North Carolina, wheels are spinning. Determination is winning. A passion is now a thriving business, and it shows no signs of slowing down. How? The power of a conversation. Like the one Clint Spiegel had with First Horizon Bank about starting a bike wheel manufacturing facility in Asheville. Now it's not just talk, it's rubber meets road. First Horizon Bank. Let's find a way. Go to firsthorizon.com/Clint. First Horizon Bank, member FDIC.
So, Robert, I want to thank you for your time. I just don't think you're the right person for this position.
I don't understand. Was it something I said?
Well, we did a background check on you and found some things of concern.
If you're in charge of hiring for your company, you know how helpful a background screening can be. That's why companies that use Horizon background screening make smarter hiring decisions. Don't let the wrong hire put your company at risk. Get the real story on your candidates at horizonscreening.com. Horizonscreening.com.